Well, it disgusts me that this is where we have to start today, but we are seeing the absolute worst of the MAGA right and of the far left as a result of this disgusting medieval attack by terrorist group Hamas on Israeli civilians. You know, I expect this from the MAGA right, but sadly, we are also seeing it from the far left, and I will be calling all of it out. Are sensible leftists the only people who can bring some sanity to this discussion? And my belief is that most of my core audience, the people I never hear from who aren't spending their day commenting online, I believe my core audience is with me on this. Let's see. Let's talk about it one by one. Now, I know this is going to rile a ton of people up, but it has to be said, because if we don't clean house on our side, we make the problem worse. So let's start with MAGA. The MAGA right immediately went to blaming Joe Biden for this disgusting attack by Hamas, where women and children and random people and music festival goers were killed, raped, kidnapped, taken hostage, and even now Israeli soldiers believed beheaded on video. The argument that the MAGA people have been making is that because Joe Biden gave Iran $6 million, this happened. Senator Tim Scott said the attack was, quote, the Biden $6 billion ransom payment at work. Pence blamed Biden, saying the current administration, quote, projects weakness on the world stage and are kowtowing to the mullahs in Iran. Now, if you're confused about how that might be the case and what Iran's money has to do with this, it's because it makes no sense. As you might recall, Joe Biden authorized the release of that money, the Iranian money, in exchange for some American hostages for humanitarian reasons. It was Iran's money. The U.S. didn't give Iran any money. And of course, even though the celebration of this attack by Iran did take place, the idea that it was because of the release of their money that this took place when this operation was clearly in the works for months, and it just makes absolutely no sense. The funding doesn't go to Iranian hands. It goes to approved third-party vendors who provide humanitarian support. This is ridiculous. And to believe that one decision about $6 million related to Iran by Joe Biden is responsible for something like this just doesn't pass the sniff test. These right-wingers deserve almost none of our time. They aren't serious people. Now, unfortunately, on the far left, there has been everything from excuses for this terrorist attack to straight up glee for what we are seeing. Don't believe me? Here's a video. This is from a rally in New York City, rally slash celebration that took place, talking about how great it is that the resistance took out hipsters, by which they mean innocent Israelis, including women and children, including at a music festival. Just listen.
When the Palestinians broke through the fence, they put the F-35 on trial. Yeah! Yeah! And as you might have seen, there was some sort of rave or desert party where they were having a great time until the resistance came in electrified hang gliders and took at least several dozen hipsters. But I'm sure they're doing very fine despite what the New York Post says.
They took out with their electric hang gliders several dozen hipsters, cheering death. And the crowd cheers right along with them. One guy at this event had a swastika that he was displaying on his phone as well. This is like cheering for Al-Qaeda the day after 9/11. Who is this? Well, sadly, it's too many people. DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, putting out vile statements immediately repudiated by former supporters of DSA, like actress, comedian Sarah Silverman. You know, when people used to ask me, what do I think about DSA? I'd say, well, I'm not a socialist, so it's not my group. This is a disgusting group. that now, in addition to not supporting because I'm not a socialist, I don't support because they put out ridiculous statements minimizing that this was a terrorist attack, period. The Sydney, Australia Jewish community has been warned to stay home. And there were, I don't know whether we call them protests or celebrations, where there were vile anti-Semitic comments and chants of gas the Jews. Don't believe me? Here's video of that. There you go. Gas the Jews. That's their economic anxiety. That's them expressing that they are against colonialism. Gas the Jews. At Cal State University Long Beach, they are planning a day of resistance and promoting the event with a poster that depicts the paraglider type device that the Hamas terrorists used to carry out the terrorist attack. This is psychopathically deranged bloodthirst. We're also hearing excuses from some in the far left. Here's why the murder, rape, and torture and kidnapping of innocent people isn't as bad as you might think, because the United States did this or Israel did that. So here's my question to you. Are you a progressive? Are you a progressive? If you are, then how on earth do you stand in favor of an outrageous, terroristic, authoritarian regime that subjugates women, puts its own people in harm's way, uses civilians as shields, opposes gay rights, women's rights, pluralism, diversity of every kind, everything that supposed leftists claim to defend and support, the way I do, is attacked by Hamas? And look around the world at who expressed support for this attack. It's, you know, the usual suspects, the usual non-democracies. You've got your Qatar and your Iran and vague statements from Putin and Saudi Arabia. Doesn't it make you wonder for a second, if you are for democracy, why is it the non-democracies in the world that are coming to the support of this disgusting attack? Well, we can all want hostilities to end and understand that this is a more than 70-year conflict, and recognize we don't need to equivocate. This was a planned medieval massacre. And now the idea that on the cusp of this, we're going to go out and say, oh, just today, after the murder of all of these innocent people, today we have been reminded that we care about Palestinian rights. But this is not at all supportive of Hamas. And yet you've got guys cheering about the murder of hipsters. So I'm a progressive. I'm a leftist. I therefore condemn this. There's no ifs, ands, and buts. It's very simple, actually, when you're genuinely on the left. Hamas stands for death to Jews. That's what it is. It stands for the destruction of Israel. It's not morally equivalent to say this is justified because of what? What could justify this? 108 bodies discovered in Kibbutz Be'eri. Women, children, entire families. 10% of the residents were killed. Okay. They went to a concert with young people, and more than 260 bodies have been recovered, some of them raped. None of those victims are representatives of the government of Israel, any more than I represented MAGA when Trump happened to be president of this country, period. Hamas beheading Israeli soldiers on video. So is Benjamin Netanyahu not actually interested in peace? Probably, definitely an impediment to peace. Of course, of course. But Hamas literally wants to just kill any Jew they can get their hands on. So yes, now Gaza is going to get crushed. Gaza is going to get crushed. Over 900 killed and 2,600 wounded in Israel. So at least that number will be killed and wounded in Gaza, I would imagine. Is that good? No. Are you hearing me? No, that's not good. Is that fair? How can anyone say killing is fair? I mean, what a sick framework, right? No, it's fair. It's fair to kill this number, but not that number. Is it obviously expected when Hamas mounts an attack like it did that this is going to happen? Of course it is. That's not a defense. That's a reality. This is one of the worst attacks on Jews in, some are saying, since the Holocaust. And I would bet that Jewish people are going to survive. but that now everything that you would predict would happen is going to happen. Israel has pledged to block food, water, and electricity to Gaza. Do I support that? Do I like that? How would anyone who is a true progressive support depriving people of food, water, and electricity? Of course not. Was it obviously predictable that if Hamas did what it did, that would happen? Obviously. And this is the second layer of the hate that is Hamas. Yes, they hate Jews, but they also don't care about their own people, because anyone would have told you this is obviously what's going to happen if Hamas does what it did. Innocent Palestinians who live in Gaza deserve to be free, period. Notice how there's no ifs, ands, or buts there either. Jews outside of Israel, most of them inside of Israel, they have nothing to do with the government. What we're talking about here is a medieval massacre. And I don't know how much more I'm going to have to say about this. We'll see what happens. We obviously have to get the hostages released to the extent that some will hopefully still be alive. On any of our platforms, we're not tolerating any anti-Semitism. I haven't even talked about this yet. We've already banned close to 100 people on different platforms for blatant anti-Semitism. We're not going to allow Hamas cheerleading. We wouldn't allow Al-Qaeda cheerleading. We don't allow Al-Qaeda cheerleading, and we're not going to allow Hamas cheerleading either. This has nothing to do with the First Amendment. I'm not the government. This is just what we're going to allow on our channel. So my belief is that the core of my audience is with me here. They're busy living their lives. They understand. We just condemn a terrorist attack. That's what we do. We don't cheer for Al-Qaeda after 9/11. We don't cheer for Hamas after this. And most of my audience, I think, is busy not posting trash to social media. So don't even bother emailing me with your Hamas apologetics. The emails are screened by our team. I won't even see them. Your emails will just be filtered into the trash in the future. So it's a waste of everybody's time. Don't even bother. And, you know, if we're talking about blaming Biden, by the way, we may want to talk a little bit about a different president who maybe actually has some blame. Let's talk about that next. There is a new focus on the leaks that Donald Trump participated in while president after this brutal terrorist attack by Hamas in Israel. What am I talking about? Well, Newsweek has a write-up about it. Donald Trump's Israel intel leak under scrutiny after the Hamas attack. It shouldn't take 1,000 dead to scrutinize what Trump did, but let's look at what it says. Donald Trump's sharing of alleged classified information to Russian officials in the White House has come under scrutiny, I'll say, after amid a large scale attack by the Hamas Islamist military group against Israel. Remember, in May of 2017, Trump defended his actions after he was found to have discussed sensitive details about an alleged ISIS plot with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Ambassador Sergei Kislyak in the Oval Office. Trump said he had a right to do so. The intel was said to have been provided to the U.S. from Israel. It was suggested at the time Trump doing this could have damaged the relationship between the two countries. It could have raised the possibility that the details would be passed from Russia to Iran, the nation that is an adversary of Israel and has long supported Hamas. That gets us to Saturday, where Hamas launched this large-scale attack, deadliest day in the conflict for decades. And a number of people are now saying, is it possible that Trump's belligerent actions in the Oval Office that day could have actually resulted in Iran assisting the Palestinian group? Tom Hartman talked about this and said Hamas apparently knew how to get around Israel's Iron Dome defenses. They probably learned this from Iran. Iran almost certainly got the information from Russia, and who gave it to Russia looks like it was Donald Trump. Allison Gill, who tweets using the account for the Mueller She Wrote podcast, said, don't forget, Trump gave Israeli intelligence to Russians in the Oval Office 6 years ago. Putin armed Iran in exchange for drones to attack Ukraine. So if you were of the mindset that Iran deserves significant blame for this, and we're still figuring that out, then you have to consider the possibility that it was from Trump via Russia that Iran may have been given the information ultimately used to help Hamas carry this out. We've been talking about this for years. It should not take 1,000 dead for what Trump did to come under more scrutiny. but that's where we are today. We'll talk more about this. So much to discuss today. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back. Well, it sounds almost unbelievable, but Donald Trump blamed hummus, the chickpea dip, for the attack on Israel. It sounds fake, but Donald Trump, as is often the case with that teleprompter, we're cutting right to the most insane moment of a series of speeches that Donald Trump gave in Iowa over the weekend. Trump doesn't recognize the word Hamas on his teleprompter, and he calls it hummus.
What about today? The Hamas terrorist invasion. I mean, when you think about, and what do you think of Hamas? What do you think? Do you know about Hamas?
Right. Some guy in the crowd yells, "Get rid of it!" He likes bean dip better, far less healthy, by the way. Terrible dip. I'm for hummus all the way. Trump's brain has become hummus at this point. And Trump not wasting the opportunity at one of these speeches, these in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, another one in Waterloo, Iowa, Trump saying nobody loves Israel more than the evangelical Christians.
And nobody loves Israel more than the evangelical Christians, I will tell you that.
Now, one thing I can tell you as a progressive Jew is that the love that evangelicals have for Israel is not particularly welcome by most progressive Jews. The love that evangelicals have for Israel is usually through some half-baked prophecy about how by supporting Israel, it will bring upon the return of Jesus and all sorts. I think there's a rapture, and I believe the Jews get killed in most of the versions of it. I say no thank you. I say no thank you to the evangelical Christians on this one. Trump, still in Cedar Rapids, refers to General Mark Milley as stupid in one of this bonkers, harebrained sir stories.
We take every little tent, we take all the big tents, we take the army tanks, the planes, we take everything. Yeah. And I had a couple of guys, like this guy Milley. What a stupid person he is. Milley, no, he's a stupid. Sir, he said to me, it's cheaper to leave the equipment than it is to take it. We take every little tent.
There you go. Now, whether the sir story actually happened or not, what we know is that one of the authoritarian nightmare things that Donald Trump has done in recent weeks is to suggest that Mark Milley, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, should have been or should be executed for treason, that that would be an appropriate punishment for Mark Milley. This is an authoritarian nightmare. Trump continuing to insist that he doesn't get a jury. He doesn't get a jury. He didn't ask for a jury, is what he should be saying.
The one in Georgia, how about that phony one? How about the one in New York? She values Mar-a-Lago at $18 million and she convinces a judge. Now, you don't know what Mar-a-Lago is, but you sort of do. So some people say it's worth 100 times that number. She values it at $18 million. And I said,
Mar-a-Lago is not worth $1.8 billion.
There's something wrong here. And everybody said that. And it's probably could be a billion and a half, could be more than that. So it could be 100 times that amount. These are crooked people. This is election interference. These are very dishonest people. And she has a judge who's a radical left judge. And, you know, and I don't get a jury. So even if I had a tough jury, I'd win. But I'm not allowed to have a jury. Nothing to do with checking a box. You know what that they're all saying, oh, the lawyer. No, you can't check a box. There's no box in there. They did it under a Consumer Fraud Act. Can you believe this? Where I did everything right, built this great company. And now they find out that the company's worth much more than.
There you go.
I did everything right and they indicted me.
Right. Really no other way to say it. It took a stranger turn in Waterloo, Iowa, at these tandem speeches that Trump gave, when he said that he has a better body than Joe Biden. This is, it's getting sad.
He's got a consultant somewhere. This is the worst consultant in politics that thinks he looks good in a bathing suit, right? No, he spends so much time at the beach. And, you know, how do you do that? And, you know, I have a much better body than him. But I'm not really sure that I want to expose it. with the sun blaring down and a sand.
Remember that Trump is obese and doesn't exercise and is at risk of death to a higher degree than Biden based on an actuarial analysis that was done. Donald Trump claims to still talk to his wife, which is pretty damn hard to believe based on what's been reported. But here is Trump saying that Melania isn't big on Trump's dances at the end of his speeches, and he's not big. She's not big on that weightlifting, the trans weightlifting sort of routine mimicry that Trump does, which, I mean, that may be true. Melania might find both of those things vile.
Because, you know, my wife, I have a wonderful wife, the great first lady who's very popular. She says, she says to me, darling, I don't like when you do the weightlifting thing or even the swimming thing because it doesn't look presidential.
That, as if everything else Trump does is presidential.
I said, let me tell you, it's much easier to look presidential than it is to do the shtick that I have to do at these places. And this is why we have, but, and she doesn't like when I dance a little bit going off, you know?
Trump actually seems to see his ridiculous behavior as shtick and that he has to do it. What's fascinating about that is it's once again an insight into Trump's mind. He doesn't want to be around the people that go to his rallies. He doesn't even really seem to want to perform in the way that he's performing, but he apparently believes he has to do it because this is the level that his followers are operating on. He has to pretend to lift weights as a trans weightlifter. He has to dance. He doesn't want to dance, actually. Trump is, in a sense, performing as he sees it down to his supporters. And that only coincides with everything we know about Trump. He spent most of his life trying to be kept away from the very people that now are his supporters. Okay, last thing here. Trump tells yet another one of these sir stories, this one in Waterloo.
And you wouldn't be having all the problems that you have right now with China. China's become very hostile. They weren't hostile with me. They weren't hostile with me. They called me sir. They don't call him sir. And you wouldn't be having all the problems that you have right now with China. China's become very hostile.
There you go. I don't know why on earth Trump thinks they don't call Biden sir. Maybe they call him Mr. President. I don't know. So a package of unhinged Iowa rallies, Trump in command of the Republican primary in Iowa for sure. And at a certain point, you start to wonder, is Trump just doing these rallies in order to take his mind off of the insanity of what he is facing when it comes to criminal and civil trials? I don't know the answer. There's new reason for MAGA panic, though. And it is called RFK Jr. Let's talk about that next. Now that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has announced again that he's running for president, you might be saying, David, wait a second. He already announced it. Yes. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. previously announced his Democratic run for president. He now has announced a new run for president as an independent, which might allow him to end up on the ballot in November of 2024 without winning any primary. And it is MAGA that is now panicking. I'm not going to exaggerate one way or the other. I love this. I think this is absolutely fantastic. Associated Press reports, RFK Jr.'s independent run for president draws Republican criticism and silence from national Democrats. Why would that be the case? Well, here's the deal. In recent polling, Bobby Kennedy Jr. seems to roughly get the same amount of support from Democrats as from Republicans. I believe that that is a sign of disaster for MAGA now that Bobby Kennedy Jr. is going from running as a Democrat to running as an independent. Some of the support that Bobby Kennedy Jr. has in the polls from Democrats is because he's been running as a Democrat, a Democratic alternative to Joe Biden. Now that he is no longer even pretending that he is still a Democrat, he is not going to get any new Democratic support. He's maxed out with Democratic support. He is not maxed out with Republicans. And this is where Trump's indictments and legal trouble could really get him in a tough position. If you are someone who, I don't know, is anti-vax, but have just been assuming you'll support Trump, and all of a sudden, there's Bobby Kennedy Jr., seemingly more vital and energetic than Trump, you might actually say, hey, I might vote Robert F. Kennedy Jr. If you're a Democrat and you really don't want to see Trump reelected And then now all of a sudden, Bobby Kennedy Jr. isn't even running as a Democrat. You're not going to say, I'll switch from Biden to independent Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So when I look at the current polling, and there's a bunch of this, Politico has an article, RFK goes independent. Does that hurt Biden or Trump? And basically what all these articles say is right now, about half of his support comes from Democrats and half from Republicans. It seems that he has reached the ceiling with Democrats, and all of the support, or most of the support, that he could gain from between now and the election could very much hurt Donald Trump. I love this. This is absolutely fantastic. And we are obviously going to be following it extraordinarily closely, because it is another X factor where we say, if this does come down to three or four swing states, maybe to 50,000, 100,000 votes in each, Bobby Kennedy Jr., as a conspiracy alternative to Donald Trump, could actually be what takes Trump down. Immediately recognizing the disaster that this is, RNC Research and associated Republican groups started sending out attacks on RFK Jr. If they believed RFK Jr.'s independent candidacy helped them, they would not be doing this. And they put out this statement, RFK is just another far left Democrat, make no mistake. He wants to ban fossil fuels. He's a liberal. He wants the Green New Deal. He wants to raise taxes. And it says, while Robert Kennedy Jr. is now running under the guise of being an independent, he is just another radical far left Democrat. Kennedy knows he will take more votes from a Republican candidate than I do from Biden. Kennedy admitted he voted for Biden in 2020. This is because they know it's bad for them. And because it's bad for them, I absolutely love it. Now, one other funny moment, straight out of Curb Your Enthusiasm, here was RFK's announcement. He couldn't find his speech, and then it ended up upside down on the teleprompter. The Curb theme should really be playing here. Take a listen to this.
I need my speech. You can't read anything. What? Yeah. It's upside down.
It's upside down is just the best. That's not what you want to hear when you're about to announce you're running for president the second time in the same race.
It's upside down.
Yeah. I am now a big supporter of this run. Now that the campaign has taken on this completely farcical tone. And oh, and by the way, listen, I don't know what's in the mind of RF Kennedy's wife, Cheryl Hines, the actress from Curb Your Enthusiasm. I don't know what's in her mind. There's an element to her participation in these interviews where it doesn't seem like she's necessarily that big on this. And I know I'm reading a lot into that. Maybe she loves this and thinks it's great. It's not striking me that she's totally thrilled with what is going on. So I actually think that Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent run, it's going to be bad for Trump, good for Biden. I welcome it, and we will certainly be following it. Turns out Hillary Clinton has been right a few times over the last, oh, I don't know, 7-8 years. Hillary Clinton is now getting crushed by MAGA for correctly saying the Trump cult needs some kind of deprogramming. Now, we've interviewed cult experts, cult psychologists, people who are experts in all sorts of these related areas that affect and afflict the Trump cultists. And it is true that they need to be pulled out of the cult. Hillary Clinton said it to Christiane Amanpour during an interview on CNN. MAGATs are absolutely furious. But what did she say that's wrong? Take a listen.
And sadly, so many of those extremists, those MAGA extremists, take their marching orders from Donald Trump, who has no credibility left by any measure. He's only in it for himself. He's now defending himself in civil actions and criminal actions. And when do they break with him? You know, because at some point, you know, maybe there needs to be a formal deprogramming of the cult members, but something needs to happen.
And how do you do that? Because you said you have to defeat them by defeating their leader. Their leader is Donald Trump. Even you have said that you expect him to be the Republican nominee. How does this change at all?
at this point, I think, sadly, he will still likely be the nominee, and we have to defeat him. And we have to defeat those who are the election deniers, as we did in 2020 and 2022. And we have to, you know, just be smarter about how we are trying to empower the right people inside the Republican Party.
Everything she's saying is absolutely correct. What is there that they are angry about? I mean, many of them welcome and celebrate being in a cult. We've done interviews at rallies where they say, we've seen Right Side Broadcasting interviews, I'm damn proud that I'm in this cult, they say. And the real conversation isn't, are they in a cult? It's how do you get them out? And we've talked about this before. It is a really tough thing to do to get cult members out of the cult because they are, by definition, brainwashed. You have to build trust with people in the cult. You have to give them a safe environment where they can question their beliefs. You know, in the cult, it is not a safe environment for Trumpists to question their beliefs. So you have to generate that. You don't beat them over the head with facts, but you at least give them access to information. You foster open dialogue. You can talk about anything you want. It's fine. Yeah, go ahead. But you're questioning this, you're questioning. That's absolutely fine. Give them a connection to their life before the cult. Remind them what things were like. I mean, things weren't always that good before the cult, but maybe for some of them they were. Professional help is often talked about in terms of getting people out of cults. You want to avoid force of any kind, both for ethical and practical reasons. It often doesn't work. You need time and patience. It can really take a long time. And importantly, you always want to welcome them out of the cult. You want to be empathetic when they start to think about coming out of the cult. You don't want to blame. You don't want to go, hey, when someone says, I'm just not sure. I may have been misled. Of course you were misled, you moron. No, I was misled. Wow. That sounds like a tough thing to be feeling, but I'm here for you. We're here for you. You empathize and you give them a place to which they can exit the cult. This is really difficult stuff. But the bottom line is, Hillary Clinton's been right a lot. Remember back in 2016 when she was also attacked for saying that about half of Trumpists are deplorable? Remember this?
Generalistic. You could put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it.
Yep. And she was lambasted for that. And she was correct. I mean, turns out she was right. You know, about half still think Trump won an election that he lost. Half would vote for him, even if he was a convicted felon. What percentage supported what took place on January 6th? I mean, Hillary Clinton was right at the end of the day. And so we don't have an answer as to what will ultimately deprogram the Trump cult. I believe the Trump cult will eventually evaporate. It will either evaporate because Trump will no longer be around, or it'll evaporate because they will be absorbed into some other element of right-wing cult. Or it's not going to be around forever. Almost nothing is around forever. But how you get the individuals out is a really tough question. And Hillary Clinton is completely correct. Hey, sort of nice victory for friend of the show, Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen used to be Donald Trump's personal lawyer, and Donald Trump had been suing Michael Cohen. And Michael Cohen said to me and to others, this is not going to work because if the lawsuit goes forward, I get to depose Donald Trump, and Trump does not want that. And indeed, Donald Trump has now dropped his $500 million lawsuit against his former attorney, Michael Cohen. A Trump spokesperson said the lawsuit would be pursued after Trump has prevailed in dealing with the witch hunts against him. The timeline of that is probably never. So I do not expect that this lawsuit is coming back. In a 2-page document filed in federal court in Miami, an attorney for the former president said Trump was voluntarily dismissing the lawsuit, which alleged breaches of attorney-client privilege. Trump accused Cohen of disparaging him through myriad public statements, including the publication of two books, a podcast series on which I've been a guest, and innumerable mainstream media appearances. He's going to sue him again after he prevails, blah, 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 blah. Okay, this is not going to happen. And here's the key line why. Trump had been scheduled to sit for a deposition in the Cohen case Monday, when he's also scheduled to hold a campaign event in New Hampshire. Trump does not want to be deposed. The last thing Trump wants is to be deposed in this way, in this scenario. And so Michael Cohen's prediction was absolutely correct. Now, we can't prove the reason why, but Cohen's prediction was he is not going to be deposed. It's too risky. What could come out of it would be so disastrous based on what Michael Cohen knows. At least for the time being, Michael Cohen was right in that it is not going to get to the Trump deposition. Will this lawsuit be brought again? I don't think so. Would there even be a basis on which Trump could prove defamation against Cohen? You know, one of the elements of defamation is that the things that were said aren't true. Michael Cohen insists everything he said is absolutely true. And that would be ultimately adjudicated if such a case were to go forward. It won't happen for now. Exactly what Michael Cohen predicted is going on, but another loss for Trump, who will at least for now recover $0 from Michael Cohen. Trump's speeches in Iowa over the weekend that we looked at earlier were not his only campaign stops. Trump also gave a speech in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. During this particular speech, he had a really Trump's emotional tone always seems inappropriate to the subject matter that he's discussing. And in this clip that I'm going to play for you, Trump refers to the horrific attack on Israel by Hamas, which he referred to in Iowa as hummus. He says it was incredible. And then he just casually shifts into reading that stupid poem, The Snake, that some people in the audience, I guess, like. Trump says people like it. I don't know that Trump's crowd is a big poetry crowd, but that's a different topic. Take a listen to this. The tone is always just inappropriate.
And now it even pertains to Israel. What happened yesterday was incredible. I mean, so many people killed. I don't know if you've been here, but the number was much bigger than they reported even this morning.
Right. Always, the numbers are always wrong. Trump always has the real numbers on whatever it is that's going on.
It's a very big number. Very, very big number. And vicious, too. Vicious. Young children just slaughtered. It's terrible what's going on. So this is the snake. And
thousand dead. I mean, it's just they're killing women and children. So anyway, here's the snake. Let's listen to this.
People love it. And I do it if people want to hear it. Some people have heard it. Some people haven't. But we'll do it, right? On her way to work one morning, down the path along the lake, a tender-hearted woman saw a poor half-frozen snake.
There you go. So just it's like a poetry slam all of a sudden. It goes from talking about terrorism to a poetry slam. So that was weird. Trump also once again talking about voter ID, this time not doing the story about how you need a voter ID to buy bread or cereal, but confusing ID badges for ticketed events with voter ID. I mean, it all couldn't possibly be any stranger.
To the Democrat convention, they had a voter ID that was the size of this. See this? Like this, it hung with a chain around their neck. It was a picture. I think it had every bit of information ever. You could read their biography, know everything about the person. They couldn't get into the convention without it. But to go to vote, we don't want voter ID. To the Democrat convention.
Really weird stuff. I mean, just clearly misunderstanding ID badges for events. And I don't know what that has to do with voting. But here's the really scary part. OK, so it's all a joke. It's all crazy. The speeches are bizarre. It's all wild. And yet Donald Trump continues to hold his biggest ever lead in the 2024 Republican primary. As essentially as of today. Trump is now polling greater than 57%. The Ron DeSantis campaign is just dying. He's dying. He's down to 12.6%. So at one point he had 31, meaning he's now lost 60% support. DeSantis has lost 60% of his support. Nikki Haley is now more solidly in third place with a shade over 7% of the vote. Vivek Ramaswamy's surge appears to be over. He's bouncing between 5 and 6. Everybody else is under 4. I don't see a path for anyone. DeSantis has to gain back the 60% he lost to even get hypothetically back into this thing. Nikki Haley needs to figure out a way to at least come in second place somewhere in order to get back into this thing. Vivek seems dead. Mike Pence never. I mean, Pence was DOA. Chris Christie, it was sort of like, do they want an anti-Trump person? Christie's polling 2, so it seems the answer is no. And then you got Tim Scott at 2. He has no path to the nomination. Doug Burgum's not even polling 1. Asa Hutchinson's polling 0.5. He didn't even make it to the last debate. Who's going to catch up to Trump? There is no path for anyone at this point in time to Donald Trump. And we can only hope that the addition of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running as an independent will hurt Trump more than it hurts Joe Biden. I believe it will. And we'll do a deeper dive on that at some point coming up. I know that many of you are anxiously awaiting news of what is going on with Pillow, MyPillow CEO and founder Mike Lindell. It's been a tough go for Pillow. Pillow had his bank drop him. Pillow announced that he's under multiple IRS audits. Pillow announced a fire sale auction on a bunch of equipment from his factories and delivery vans and furniture. Pillow manufacturing equipment and all sorts of different things. The latest here for the guy who really, you know, he could have just lived the rest of his life out as a rich, successful businessman. Trump almost became a substitute for his previous addictions in a way, you could say. And now here's what's going on with Pillow announcing it to Steve Bannon. His lawyers have dropped him because he's not paying them, because he doesn't have any money to pay them. Take a look at this.
We have breaking news, kind of shocking news. Mike Lindell joins me. Mike, can you please tell me what in the hell's going on here? Because I'm totally confused now, sir.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, the 10 minutes ago, all the
Pillow almost in tears.
Lawyers we have for MyPillow and myself in the lawsuits with the Lawfare with Dominion and Smartmatic, they just filed in federal court that to drop us as our attorneys, and this comes from the Lawfare basically, and from the media, the attacks on MyPillow. What American Express did, just devastating our credit. And I can't pay the lawyers. We can't pay. There's no money left to pay them. And I told the attorneys, these are great attorneys. They were courageous, came on a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, and they need to get paid. They have families and stuff too. And I told them, I have to protect my company. I have to protect that. I can't keep paying into this Lawfare. And so they've had to drop us. I don't know where that leads us, but I wanted to get out in front of it before the media is going to attack again, like you've never seen today. And I went down, I've called them, I talked to them. They filed it 10 minutes ago, and these guys were great, just great lawyers. And but they have families, they have kids, they have grandchildren, they have, you know, a Lawfare is affecting everyone.
So understand, when Pillow uses this term Lawfare, this is a I'm sure many of you are familiar with the term warfare. Lawfare, they've created this term to mean the use of the law in a weaponized way. And I think what Pillow's trying to say is that it's become too risky for his lawyers to keep representing him because of the Lawfare, the legal warfare being launched against them. But he's saying he doesn't have the money to pay them. So it seems basically it's just like they need to get paid, their lawyers. And this whole MAGA world of not paying lawyers is really something
disgusting
else.
Disgusting media that attacks MyPillow. So then all the time and this.
But hang on a second. Slow down. Are you going to go forward in these suits? Are you going to? How long do you have to get new lawyers?
I don't know, Steve. I don't know. I guess it would be up to the judges. But I don't know who wants to be a lawyer if you can't get paid. I don't know how this works. All I know is that I'm out there fighting for my company that was sued for billions of dollars. That they've done nothing wrong. They're an employee-owned company. But if there's nothing left to fight for, you know, do I pay the lawyers that were fighting for this? So I don't know where it goes.
Now, listen, it sort of is sounding like Pillow is broke, but I kind of doubt that. My guess is that there's separation in assets between a bunch of his personal assets and some of what's going on. I know he has put like last he was on this show, he said he had put $35 million into all this election nonsense. This is really a tragic tale. Now, it's completely self-inflicted. You don't have to feel bad for the guy, but it is a tragic tale in the sense that he does have an employee-owned company. I mean, listen, it's like he owns most of it, but it's he has a company with employees in the United States that provide jobs that I think are at least okay. And imagine being one of those employees and you don't have $200 million or whatever amount Mike Pillow has. And all of a sudden your boss loses it. It's in a way like if you're just calmly working at Twitter and in comes the wrecking ball of Elon Musk. And next thing you know, you're out of a job and the company's imploding. They're looking at what their boss is doing. And I'm sure many of them are thinking, what on earth is wrong with this guy? He might be able to afford this stuff, but we really don't. And so whatever level of care Pillow expresses for his employees, it is natural to question it, given that his actions for years have been bad for his employees. And he just keeps going. I know people have suggested he used to be addicted to drugs, that this entire new thing with the election and everything is his new drug of sorts. I'm not qualified to make that determination, but there seems to be something almost diagnostic about his fixation with continuing to push this stuff. At this point, I don't even know that it's about being in Trump's good graces. I don't know that Pillow's even in touch with Trump or is in that periphery in any way. So it doesn't mean we feel sad in the sense that he brought it on himself. He probably still has tens of millions, if not more, money. He's going to be okay. It's a tragedy in that it was completely optional. The Rudy Giuliani implosion, again, completely optional. And so there is a tragic element to it. We have to talk about something that it's genuinely upsetting, and I can't believe this is happening again. Fox News is now attacking me. Fox News has dropped a full copyright strike on our YouTube channel because we covered the Republican primary debate that was broadcast by Fox News. I don't even know where to start with this, but a whole bunch of our YouTube channel features, including live streaming, are now in jeopardy. So first and foremost, here's the copyright strike. We're putting it up on the screen for everybody. As you can see, they've dumped this strike in on us. It lasts 90 days. Fox Media LLC, there it is. They took down our entire video, including the hour plus of coverage before the debate even started, where there's absolutely no issue. Now, I'm going to tell it to you like it is. My view, and the view of so many others, is that these debates are critical elements of democracy, which allow voters to make the most important decision they can make in the context of voting, which is, who do I support? One of the ways we find out who do we support is by watching debates. These debates that are organized by networks are in this sort of strange situation where they are not presidential debate commission debates, which are totally open source, which are on every channel. They're on one channel. And the argument that Fox and once before CNN made when they took us down was, this is our product. We own the copyright to this. This is just ours. And I'm not going to pretend that that's invalid legally. My argument, and the argument of people like me who believe that these are public services, has been that our coverage of those debates falls under fair use. Now, I know people are going to write to me and say, David, you can't just claim fair use on a podcast. That's an argument you make in court. That's absolutely the case. When I say my belief is that our broadcasting of these debates is fair use, what I mean is, if I went to court with this, which, what would it cost to go to court against Fox News? What I, through lawyers, would argue is, this is a public service of newsworthy value. We are transforming it by the addition of my commentary and the commentary of the audience. So it is not simply a retransmission of copyrighted content. We're doing my commentary. We're mixing in commentary and clips from other people. people call in. Okay, that's the argument we would make. Now, I can never do that. Why can't I do that? Because it could cost six figures in legal fees to do that. Oh, but David, if you win, then you could recover the... I'm going to float six figures in legal fees to go after this. So where are we right now? Well, if this happens again, we lose live streaming privileges and a whole bunch of other features. And it is truly, truly a disgusting situation. Now, we're going to do everything we can to appeal this decision and to be in good standing at the time of the next debate, which is, I think, in just a few weeks. In the interim, the best thing you can do is support the very YouTube channel that they are trying to shut down. The bigger the channel is, the more attention we can get from YouTube if indeed they come after us further. They can go further and take me to court. I don't know that they're going to do that. We haven't received legal notice yet. So subscribe to the YouTube channel. We are under 70,000 subscribers away, as you can see on the screen, from 2 million, which is an incredible milestone. We're at 1.93 million and change. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We know there's more than 5 million people out there who watch the videos but aren't subscribed. Just subscribe. It costs you absolutely nothing. And also, as you know, we can lose our financial revenue from YouTube like that if this stuff goes nuclear. It's happened in the past. It's happened with Twitch. It's happened with Facebook. It's happened with every single platform. So if you were able, I would love it for you to get a membership on my website. Okay. Just go to joinpacman.com. We have a new coupon code. The coupon code is FFOX. I think you understand the meaning. It's Fox with two Fs at the beginning, no space. FFOX. You can get a monthly membership, a yearly membership. This is super cheap. You may not know this, okay? I need to have a real heart-to-heart with people. You may not know this. If you have cable TV, you're sending Fox $3 to $4 a month already. Fox, unlike the other cable channels, gets a large chunk of its revenue from the subscription fees it has negotiated with Xfinity, Comcast, Cox, Charter, all those companies, okay, AT&T. If you have cable TV, you're probably sending them $4 a month. You can come to my website, joinpacman.com, use the coupon code FFOX, and instead you'll be sending us $3 a month. It's your call, okay? This is a crazy situation. You can subscribe on YouTube. It's free. And you can use the coupon code FFOX. We have filed a counter notification. We're hoping we don't get legal service in the mail with something bigger. I will let you know ultimately what happens. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here are multiple voicemails saying, I'm not going to cover what happened in Israel because I'm scared. Here's the first one.
Hey, David, so why don't you use your massive platform to talk about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, you know?
Right.
Since you cover the news every day, are you too busy milking Trump's udders all day? Like, for real, like, are you going to cover, like, so, like, not that that's not important, but, like, this is a very serious issue, and you just
right.
brush it off. Every single time anybody brings it up, and it's pretty disgusting.
Well, it was the first segment on today's show. Here's another person complaining about the same thing.
Hey, David, this is Troy. I don't call 10 times a day, but there is a system of purchasing bots, and the music industry perfected this with their fake numbers and streaming numbers. I'm still anxiously waiting for a video on the attack on Israel by Hamas. I find it curious, maybe because you're left-wing that you're scared. I don't know. You look nervous. Your face is swollen.
Yeah. Listen, there is one reason that there was no coverage of what happened in Israel before today. We do not do shows on weekends. We are a Monday to Friday podcast. The attack was on a Saturday, and we were off Monday for the holiday. Hey, guys, cancel our planned day off, which we agree upon a year in advance, because I need you to come in so I can do a clip, okay? Every single time this happens, I'm not hiding from anything. I did a 15-minute segment about that at the top of the show. So please, save it. Okay. Come on, guys. Give me a break. I need 11,000 clips about what happened. Give me a break. We were off on the weekend. That's the one and only explanation. All right. We have a great bonus show for you today. Kevin McCarthy now says, oh, I'll go back to being speaker if they want me to. Oh, okay. That sounds really odd. California will require large firms to reveal their carbon emissions. Very interesting new law. And North Carolina Republicans are creating what is effectively a secret policy force, a secret police force. Sorry. What is that all about? We will discuss all of those stories and more. The continuing tragic saga, in a sense, that is Rudy Giuliani's complete implosion of his political and professional career continues. Rudy Giuliani is now suing President Joe Biden for calling him a Russian pawn. There's a CNN report about this. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani filed a defamation lawsuit against Biden for calling him a Russian pawn. During a presidential debate nearly 3 years ago, Giuliani announced the lawsuit at a rambling press conference outside a courthouse in New Hampshire, where he filed in order to take advantage of the state's defamation laws. He reiterated several attacks against Biden and his son Hunter, though he's only suing Joe Biden, despite the high bar for statements by public figures in a political setting to be found defamatory. So calling this a rambling press conference is an understatement. Understand that even conceptually, as we've talked about before, when you're talking about defamation, generally, it can be different depending on the state. But generally, you need to demonstrate a number of elements. One, that the statements that were made were untrue. Two, that they were made in a public setting and communicated to a third party. And three, that they actually damaged your reputation or career or life materially. It's very difficult to imagine that Joe Biden's comments about Rudy 3 years ago could be demonstrated to have materially harmed Rudy, particularly when he did so many things to harm himself. But regardless, here's Rudy Giuliani, sort of confused, you know, explaining, I guess, what he's doing.
Thank you, Lou. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill, very, very much. He's our counsel in the state of New Hampshire. And Lou is my counsel overall, because there are going to be a lot of implications from this case. As you can tell, it has a great deal of room for expansion, because a lot of people helped Joe Biden with this terrible lie that he told. Joe Biden has spent his life telling lies, getting away with it. Now he gets away with it because you let him get away with it. You foisted it on us, I mean, the press. An American president who is a pathological liar. That has implications for national security. As a result of Joe Biden's lies, people have died.
I don't know what he's talking about there.
Would there be a war in Ukraine if Donald Trump were president? Absolutely.
By the way, what this has to do with defamatory alleged statements against Rudy, obviously we're already off track.
Putin invaded Ukraine and Georgia three times. One time with Biden, one time with Obama, one time with Bush. Only time he didn't, Trump was the president. Afghanistan. So in some ways, the damage done to me is less severe. He didn't get me killed, although there have been death threats.
Right.
His lies cost me a good deal of my law practice.
Now, remember, what caused this is... You know, they claim to be the party of personal responsibility. What cost Rudy? That's actually not bad. He did loot. What cost Rudy much of his law practice was that he pursued obviously ridiculous claims about the 2020 election in court, associated himself with people like Sidney Powell and Jenna Ellis, humiliated himself in an incredible manner day after day after day. That's why he lost a bunch of the law practice, not because of Joe Biden and whatever Biden said in a debate years ago.
It cost me directly a good deal of my million person audience on Common Sense, where I was cut off by YouTube, which operates as a...
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. And we will make sure Israel has what it needs to take care of its citizens, defend itself, and respond to this attack.
A shipment of U.S. arms has arrived in Israel as an Israeli ground invasion of Gaza now appears imminent following Hamas's surprise attack that killed 1,200 people inside Israel. Meanwhile, the besieged Gaza Strip is facing a humanitarian catastrophe as Israel intensifies its bombing campaign that's already killed over 1,000 Palestinians.
I've never seen airstrikes like this time. Not in 2014, not in 2008. No war was like this time. I've never seen anything like this. Every minute and every second, there are airstrikes.
We'll go to Ramallah in the occupied West Bank to speak with Mustafa Barghouti of the Palestinian National Initiative, and to Tel Aviv to speak with the Israeli journalist Gideon Levy of Haaretz. Then we host a debate between two leading progressive activists on U.S. funding for the war in Ukraine. We'll speak with Barbara Smith of the Ukraine Solidarity Campaign and Code Pink's media, Medea Benjamin. They'll also discuss U.S. military funding for Israel. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll in Israel and Palestine has soared to over 2,200, with at least 1,200 Israelis and 1,000 Palestinians killed since Hamas's surprise attack on southern Israel Saturday. The majority of Palestinian deaths are in Gaza. At least 18 deaths were reported in the West Bank. Israel's amassing some 300,000 reservists close to Gaza as it continues to pound the besieged enclave with airstrikes. Officials warn Gaza is on the cusp of a humanitarian catastrophe as the territory's power plant is running out of fuel. The scale of atrocities committed against civilians continues to come to light. In Gaza, rescuers are still pulling bodies from the rubble as desperate residents seek refuge.
They tried to escape death only to find it. The occupation planes followed them from the east to here. They came to find shelter. They were taking refuge next to the stairs where it could have been a safe place. They targeted them and killed them. This is the blood of injured people. Some injured people were sleeping here. This is their blood. Here there was a mother and her children. We removed the woman in the evening and the children were martyred and we just took them out from under the rubble.
Among the dead in Gaza are at least seven journalists. On Tuesday, media workers held a funeral procession for two of the slain reporters. Blue press helmets were placed on their bodies. The local press union said the head of its committee of women journalists, Salam Khalil, was killed alongside her husband and children when their home was bombed. Gazan journalist Plestia Alakad has been chronicling the war on social media, giving a rare first-person insight into the constant evacuations, bombings, and deprivation faced by residents of Gaza.
We're all gathering at our neighbor's house. No internet, no electricity until now. It's around 7 p.m. We literally don't know what's happening in the world here. We're just listening to bombs.
In Israel, over 100 bodies were found at the Be'eri kibbutz near Israel's separation barrier with Gaza. It was one of several kibbutzim attacked by Hamas fighters, killing entire families, including children. Meanwhile, at least 100 hostages, at least 100 hostages, are believed to be held by Hamas in Gaza. Among those missing are U.S. citizens. This is Jonathan Dekelchen, father of Sagi Dekelchen.
Kibbutz Neir Oz is no more. It was destroyed in a barbaric, inhuman attack in which dozens of my friends, my neighbors,